Well, hello everyone. Welcome to A Basic Conversation. We always enjoy our great listeners tuning in. And today, Father Basic and I are going to continue our delving into high-impact theologians that have had a positive influence on the church, on society, and in many cases, personally to Father Basic. So Father Basic, we're up again, and at the plate is Johann Metz.
Johann Metz, yeah, and probably not a household name for people, but let's try to locate him a bit, okay?
Should we fill in his background?
He's a German theologian. Let's start with that. And probably part of his story that's most important is during the Second World War, he was drafted, as most young teenagers were, into the German army. And he was 16 years old then.
Yeah, very young.
Yeah, and his platoon was stationed in a dangerous spot. His commanding officer told him to go report to somebody else, so he left the group, and when he came back, they were all dead. Hmm. And he talks about this silent cry in his heart that he walked around for hours, and with this total grief and deep feeling, and a feeling that never left him and was a shaping influence on his life, really. So he was later in the war captured by the Americans and was in France for a while, but then he was brought to the United States. So he spent time in the U.S. Then he went back to Germany after the war, went to seminary, became a priest of the Diocese of Munich, Germany, and became a theologian and studied under my mentor, Karl Rahner, great German Jesuit, and became one of Rahner's most prominent disciples and a friend. And along the way, had reason to criticize his mentor. Rahner directed his dissertation, and Metz began to think that, for various reasons, that Rahner's whole project was not as with it for the modern world as he would like, so he went off on his own, in a sense. And at one point, he was offered a prestigious position at the University of Munich, in Germany. He advanced rapidly, and Cardinal, at that time, Archbishop Ratzinger, who became Cardinal Ratzinger, who became Pope Benedict XVI, refused to allow Metz to take that new position. I think he thought he was too radical and so on. And Rahner came to his defense, the man who is, you know, is now criticizing the master. Rahner, a big man that he was, not stature-wise, but a big man, mentally, emotionally, came to Metz's defense, and in the process became alienated from the future pope. So that it was part of Rahner's difficulties with Ratzinger as a cardinal, as a defender of the faith, and later as a pope himself. So that part of the story might be helpful in locating Johann Metz. In the chapter in my book, Brad, I talked about him as someone who's helping us deal with individualism, or what he would call privatism. So let's just go back to, you know, the examples of individualism in our culture. I remember living through a decade we called the me decade, where it was all about what am I going to get out of it. There was a time when I worked in a warehouse, and we were piling up big boxes of cigarettes. I'd pile up 20 boxes of Lucky's for one of Marlboro's. In one of the great advertising campaigns we've seen, they put a man on a horse out by himself, and before long, I was piling up more Marlboros than Lucky's.
Because of the rugged individualism that that symbolizes.
Exactly. Think of the Easy Rider, how the guy on a motorcycle. That's Easy Rider, goes off by himself. The cowboy has no ties. Cowboy comes in, straightens out what's going on in the town, and rides off. No ties. Think of bachelor parties. What are bachelor parties? You're losing your freedom. We're going to have one last fling before you lose your freedom forever. It's an odd notion, but part of our culture. So those are examples of what we might call individualism or privatism. And Metz's project, in a way, tries to deal with that.
And what's the dangers of privatism? Why was he such an advocate for more of the social aspect of us as human beings?
Because he saw the dangers of individualism. The Enlightenment and that development of that idea was good in many ways. You know, it brought in human rights and freedom and so on. But he was afraid that you lost then the political dimension of life. So if everyone's walking around doing their own thing, then we lose sight of the power of institutions. And I would say we're going through that now. There's great attacks on our institutions. We have many people now who say they are spiritual but not religious. And so instead, religious and religious institution is actually hurting their progress. They see that as an obstacle to growth. That's very common. A growing number, 20% of the population or more, say that they're spiritual but not religious. So, and he thought that ends up hurting society, and institutions are played down. If you want to talk about a contemporary problem now, I mean, you know, attacks on our court system, attacks on the police, on institutions,
education,
government.
Yep.
No one trusts the government and so on. So Metz goes about, and his answer to all that is to create what I will call, a political theology. So let me try to tell you what he meant by a political theology, okay? So when we do a theology, first of all, we do a anthropology. That is, what do we say about human nature? And Metz's answer, of course, is that we are social creatures. We are interdependent. We need one another to grow up. We need good families and so on. We're social creatures. And we're institutional creatures. We have to live in institutions no matter what else. I mean, you might not like them or whatever, but it's part of life. So we have political theology. You want to see an anthropology that celebrates the fact that we are all before God. We are, as he said, every human being before God is a subject. By that he meant a person who has responsibilities, a person who can hear God's call, an individual who can say yes to God, who can live out their vocation and so on. So that would be sort of a beginning point for him, what we say about human nature. Then also when he talks about talks about who are human beings, who is God, who is Christ, who is the church, how do we celebrate liturgy, what about our morality and so on, and our thoughts of the end of the world. So all full theology. Now, Metz did not work out a full system himself, but he has parts of it. So I'm going through those parts is what I'm doing right now. And for God, he liked to stress, God is the God of the living and the dead. I think it was his way of looking at his comrades in arms that all died, and he comes back and he has this silent cry in his heart. I think the answer is they're with God somehow. God doesn't forget them. God is the God of the living and of the dead. And he also likes to think of God as the compassionate one. The word compassion comes from the Greek compassio, from the Latin compassio, which means to suffer with. And so that God is compassionate means he suffers with us, or he's with us in our suffering. I might talk forever here.
You're doing great.
Am I okay still going on with this?
You're doing great.
I got a frame to do the whole thing, so I don't want to put you out of a job.
No, but, listening is a big part of my job, so keep going.
Okay, stop me. What would be good if you stop me if you got a question, because I feel like I'm on a roll.
I will interject the question.
Yeah, if you want, yeah. Okay. So there's God, we're social creatures, God is compassionate with us, and then Christ is the liberator of the captives. Christ is the one who comes to overcome injustice. So we like to think of God in various ways, how he was thought of as in his society. God was thought as a Jesus was thought of as a heretic by the Sadducees and the Pharisees, especially the Pharisees. The Sadducees saw him as a threat to their power. Hmm. Herod thought he was a fool, and Pilate thought he was a rebel that had to be executed. So Jesus is... Metz liked to talk about it. He came to preach the good news to the poor, to liberate the captives, to challenge structures and so on. And Metz was big on the stories of Jesus. In fact, he talked about a narrative theology where you emphasize the stories, the story of how God is with us, the stories of how Jesus challenged the power structures, the stories that Christians live. He called it a narrative theology, which caught on with a lot of people. I used a lot of that myself about the stories and so on. And so the other big thing in talking about Jesus was that he said that he emphasized the dangerous memory of Jesus. Did you get much out of that? I'm trying to not keep talking, but what dangerous memory of Jesus. Did you pick up on that?
Just that I didn't get the whole framing of that, except that Jesus' life was so impactful that you can't ignore it.
Okay, yeah. Why is it dangerous? It's dangerous because he was such a rebel in his own society, because he was a nonconformist, because he spoke truth to power. Right. And if we're going to follow him, that becomes dangerous for us. If you listen to Jesus, you might think, man, I better do more to help the poor. I better hunger and thirst for righteousness in my life. I might have to upend some of my values. I might have to share more of the blessings that I've received. It's dangerous because it challenges our ordinary ways of thinking. In a way, Metz is good for talking to what we might call middle-class Americans. He's very critical of middle-class people at his time. Incidentally, he died in 2018, just to get him in historical. He lived to be 91 years old, and he died in 2018.
Well, you talked about the narrative. How did the Sermon on the Mount interpretation? There was an element of that in your chapter that I couldn't grasp.
Yeah, right. What he said was that we tend to interpret the Sermon on the Mount, and especially the Beatitudes, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are the meek, and so on, in a privatistic way. So that if someone says, well, if I'm a peacemaker, then I will be happy, I will be blessed. That's to interpret it in an individualist way. What he said, we should interpret the Sermon on the Mount as being a challenge to the injustice of the world. So to be a peacemaker would mean we have to challenge the structures of oppression, of domination, of control, of war, battles, fighting, and all of that. So that's a very good example of what he was about. Reinterpret the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes in political terms. So the memory of Jesus is dangerous because it's gonna say, well, we have to follow him. So when we talk about morality, so what Metz was big on, say, morality isn't just about personal sins. You know, it's got to do with challenging the unjust structures in the world.
Which is a taller task than just the things we wrestle with individually.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's social. It's always a social, political context that he's talking about. And there, he was critical of the German bishops, for example. Let me bring this up in morality. One of the things he talked about was Auschwitz, the Auschwitz challenge. He often says that he lived about 30 miles away from Flossenbürg, one of the holding camps before the death camps, and his mother denied ever knowing it was there. I remember traveling in Germany and trying to get to Dachau as a tourist, and nobody within 20 miles knew where Dachau was. In other words, there's a forgetting of the Holocaust. And, of course, he's part of this whole movement. You have to remember the Holocaust so we don't repeat its terrible things that happened. And so we have to never again be as part of his idea. Can't never have the Holocaust again. But he said that the German people, and he said the American Hitler field feared the American, the Catholic bishops. And they had power, and they never used it. They didn't challenge. And he's critical of Rahner. He says Rahner never wrote extensively about the Holocaust, about Auschwitz. And he's right. Rahner did not have extensive treatment of that. And so he's saying that's a horrible mistake, and we have to overcome that.
Why do you think that happened with Rahner and the Catholic?
Hard to know. In many conversations with Rahner, it never came up. I don't know the answer to that. It's a puzzle and a grave problem. Rahner was banished from teaching, and he had to go into exile during the Nazi regime, so he suffered from it. He did a lot of pastoral work in a small village in Germany during that time, out of the limelight. But he wasn't like Karl Barth and the Confessing Church that challenged Hitler directly.
And so the church also has anti-Semitism charges against him because of the lack of response.
Yeah, yes.
Has the church ever atoned for that or explained
that? No, it's been a controversial issue. It came up with Pope Pius XII. Did he do, what should he have done to stop the Holocaust? The defenders say he did a lot, and he did more because he was silent. In other words, he didn't come out with a big statement against Hitler. He worked behind the scenes, and there's been plays about this and a lot of controversy, usually centered on Pope Pius XII and not on the German bishops, as really Metz did. It was the German bishops who had power and didn't use it. And other people would say, well, Pius XII did his best because he saved a lot, and he did save a lot of people, there's no doubt about it. They worked out passports and visa and so on for Jewish people and harbored Jewish people. So it remains a controversial issue. But Metz is on the side of should have spoken out more against Hitler. And then the mass itself, you know, we talk about memory. You know, at Mass, we say Jesus, when we repeat the words of Jesus, Mass, do this in remembrance of me. So we ask, what is the Eucharist? What is Mass for us? Well, it's a community gathering. It's worshiping God. It's celebrating beauty and so on. And for Metz, it's a memorial meal. Just as Jesus said, do this in remembrance of me. And so for him, when you go to Mass, we're remembering Jesus, but we're remembering Jesus who was challenging the power of his day. And we're remembering Jesus as the liberator of captives. And so that's a dangerous memory of Jesus. You know, there's a lot of connections between Metz and what we call liberation theology. It's similar in the idea that the big challenge is to deal with the structures of evil. You know, it's one thing to say, well, we're going to try to help poor people, but the real thing is to find the structures in society that poor people can have jobs and that have meaningful work and can take hold of their own lives. And he liked the idea of base communities. That was pioneered in Latin America. But he liked that idea of small groups getting together and themselves discussing without a priest, maybe, without lay people, talking about their faith and how to improve their life in various ways, where the people in the base community become the teachers. They're the ones who recognize oppression. They know what it means to be oppressed and to be held down. And so Metz liked that idea of the base communities finding a way to empower themselves, take hold of their own lives, find ways to work together in solidarity to make society more just. So that's another big part of where Metz went. So are we getting the picture? I mean, Metz is not a big name now. He didn't start a whole movement like some others did, like von Balthasar or Rahner or Alfred North Whitehead, or he didn't start a movement. But a lot of that stuff he talks about is talking to middle-class Americans today. And do we buy? See, he thought the problem was middle-class Americans, like, and he did know the United States because he lived here, you know, buy into what he called a consumerist culture. That is, our worth is determined by how high we move up the economic ladder and how many material goods we have, how much we can acquire, how much control we have, how much power we have over other people. So he thought the capitalistic system like that fed into this individualism or this privatism, and that we had to challenge that whole notion. And we needed to remind people, middle-class Americans, that there's more to life than making money. And there's family might be more important than job, and that God, doing God's will in the world, is what it's finally all about. So there'd be a whole like change in mentality that he wanted, a whole different outlook, so that we're people who recognize that the system we live under, it has many blessings for us. But we can't, because it can't become an idol. We can't make market economics an idol. We have to find a way. It's the cross is judge of the flag. The Christian message, we pledge allegiance to Jesus Christ and his message before we pledge allegiance to the flag. And therefore, the Christian outlook has a critique. It has a way of saying, look, don't get caught up in this system entirely. Thank God if it's benefited you in your life, but what you got to do is use your advantages and blessings to help others, and you need to remember that institutions should further justice for everyone, not just the advantaged few. And that we finally live out a political theology that centers on Jesus Christ, the liberator of captives, and Christ, who is dangerous memory. Meditate on Jesus, the dangerous memory, and see where he will take each one of us to live more effectively in our middle-class world.
Yeah, that's very powerful, the dangerous memory metaphor. And you provided some really good ways for us to apply Metz's theology to our daily lives.
I hope so.
Definitely, definitely. Challenging, for sure.
I hope so.
Thank you, JB.